Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Gigabit Nation, Broadband Talk Radio. I'm your host, Craig Settles, and I'd like to welcome everyone in the audience today and thank you for taking time to be with us as we help public, private, and nonprofit organizations tackle important broadband issues, getting broadband everywhere it needs to be. Recently, I had the founders of Air.U on the show, and they described their initiative that's actually genius in its simplicity. Gig.U, somewhat related, but it's a different program, is making a big splash with research universities that are playing with the technology to test out potential applications for gigabit networks. Air.U is taking things from a different perspective, where they are focusing on putting broadband structure and infrastructure into place and exploring appropriate applications while they're building the infrastructure. And to make this whole process more affordable, they have proposed looking at TV white space as the wireless technology of choice in their particular initiative. One of Air.U's partners is the United Negro College Fund, and they have raised money for and represent the interests of historic black colleges and universities here in the U.S. Our guest today is the organization's Vice President for Operations and Technology, Robert Rucker. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Craig. Glad we'll be able to chat about this very important issue. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, so let's start with a basic overview of what the United Negro College Fund is and what issues you address, particularly as it pertains to broadband, but, you know, just give us a general sense of the organization.
The United Negro College Fund, UNCF, is a 70-year-old organization chartered in 1944 to help historically black college and universities raise support, funding, if you will, for their operations and administrative expenses. It's something that UNCF has been very successful at over the past decades, and this opportunity that we're discussing today falls right in line. UNCF is very active in advocating on behalf of HBCUs, their students, surrounding communities, and their broader constituent base. This is an opportunity we feel that, again, greatly aligns with the work that we do, in that the acquisition of this very valuable asset will have an extraordinary impact, and a cascading impact, we hope, on not only the institutions themselves, but their ability to fulfill their goals and oftentimes objectives in serving the broader community base. UNCF provides a varying array of support in technology and direct funding for schools and scholarships, internships, fellowships. It's a very vast, if you will, a portfolio and suite of offerings.
Mm-hmm. So now, before we went live, you know, I'd asked you the question about, you know, does your group, department, you know, get actively involved in the technology needs and initiatives of the colleges that you represent? And maybe just we could recap some of that, you know, some of your comments from that as well, in terms of, you know, specifically speaking to technology, where your group plays a role.
Well, yes, absolutely. Again, under the broader umbrella of UNCF support, we are always assessing the needs of our individual and collective member community. To that extent, we are looking for ways that we can help fulfill their goals and objectives in serving students on their campus and, again, the surrounding community. So we are looking for opportunities to represent the consortia, if you will, in acquiring resources and support that would be beneficial for them. This can include, again, direct funding, but more importantly, or equally importantly, oftentimes hardware, a software for operating system support for data centers, and again, broader, looking at telecom needs, if you will, and infrastructure needs, and how can we as a representative body of those institutions go about the business of identifying resources and closing gaps in their need to supplement their ongoing efforts to provide the technology necessary for them to operate their campuses and do the very important work that they do in educating these young folks and students of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the I've written actually a couple of books about wireless and mobile business strategy. A lot of it centered around using mobile devices and so forth. But at the time, 2001, when I was writing the first book on wireless, I looked at UC Berkeley and Stanford universities. Stanford was being very aggressive at using wireless and mobile technology in the classroom. Cal at the time was aggressively looking at making wireless available across campus as a way for students to get connected. And I'm sure they've, you know, obviously in 10 years have evolved a lot since then. But what would, in a general sense, what would you say are some of the major initiatives that your member colleges are doing, either in the area of using wireless and mobile as a way to facilitate education or the educating process, and what ways are they using the technology to facilitate access?
Well, you know, I would like to say that historically, black college and universities operate under the same principles as the Stanfords and the Cal Berkeleys and the MITs. Historically, mm-hmm. they've just not had access to the same resources, if you will, that those other institutions that you mentioned have. So the desire to provide connectivity, if you will, the desire to fully leverage information age resources, is present in the HBCU Academy as it is in other areas of the educational sector. To that extent, again, these schools have been somewhat challenged in having the investments, internal and external, to take advantage of some of the same opportunities. It's also worth noting that many of these schools, the HBCUs, if you will, are located in the South. Quite a few are in rural areas that have not had the infrastructure investment from the external marketplace to build out the technology capability to then leverage with the, on campus. So the desire of the schools to fully leverage information age resources, to have fully functional digital platforms is present, as it is with most schools. The ability to meet the expectations of new millennial students is the same as well. So these schools are very much about the business of, excuse me, of being able to provide information age access and resources in a digital form, digital platforms, if you will, and fully leveraging mobile technology to ensure that the students are provided the same benefits, if you will, of access and exposure that they would on any other campus, to the extent that the surrounding infrastructures provide the foundation for them to adequately leverage those technologies. Certainly, mobile technology and digital application are present on these campuses, perhaps not to the extent equitably as it would be perhaps on some of the ones that we've mentioned, but certainly smart classrooms, being able to extend the classroom beyond the physical parameters of the campus is something that is being leveraged on a daily basis. And online, distance education, these things are prevalent as well. And these are areas where HBCUs are remaining competitive and or trying to ensure that they become as competitive as they can be, again, respective of new millennial expectations.
This is pretty interesting. So there's a couple things, I was listening to what you're saying, so there's a couple things I find interesting, which is one, that you are vulnerable because of the location and because of being in rural areas to the lack of infrastructure overall. In other words, in some of these rural areas and lower income areas and so forth. And I'm assuming that was one of the drivers for getting involved with Air.U, because Air.U's philosophy seems to be, well, it is actually, is that we have lots of colleges in rural America, small town America. The lack of infrastructure, which has plagued, the average consumer or the average small business in these communities, also affects colleges. And but because colleges are a key part of the community, then their move is to use colleges as kind of the lever to get technology into places where it isn't currently. Am I reading that correctly?
Absolutely. I think we're familiar with the term of a campus community, if you will, and they exist throughout the country. State colleges often create a feel, if you will, and a reality of a campus community. HBCUs are no different in that regard, other than perhaps the surrounding infrastructure. These schools are often hubs of the surrounding community. They're often the key employer of the surrounding community. The ability to attract external faculty, external investment, if you will, as well as clearly the student population, is somewhat impacted, if you will, by the expectation of what the life on campus will provide. And while it's not exclusively a campus challenge, again, the surrounding community, the infrastructure, we've seen the commercials, "Hey, can you hear me now?" While that's done somewhat tongue-in-cheek in some of these communities, that's quite a reality. And to the extent that you want to provide not only faculty and administrators, students as well, with the most robust opportunity, if you will, for exposure in an educational environment, not having the requisite infrastructure for a school to leverage provides an ongoing challenge, which is creates a vicious cycle, if you will. Does the investment come first, or can the investment leverage existing opportunities? We're talking about this within an educational framework, but it clearly impacts public safety, health care provision, and all of the other components, if you will, that make up a thriving community environment. So, yes, the last mile, digital divide, these types of references are very much applicable to these communities. And investment has been something that has been challenging with regard to enticing providers, if you will, of these services to make the requisite investment and showing that there is a reasonable return on investment or an acceptable return on investment for them, in fact, to invest in connectivity for these communities who will then be able, if you will, again, to leverage that, like other communities, into a much broader and fuller community experience. So where a lot of, not all, but where a lot of HBCUs are located outside of the urban centers, and again, in more rural communities. And that goes back to their founding as to why they were founded, the populations they were founded to serve were rural, agricultural, farming, and at the time, very often, where the student population did not have other options. So they were somewhat isolated and within themselves as self-contained entities. Communities oftentimes grew up around the HBCU. But the infrastructure investment has not always caught up or stayed current. So, yes, what we are looking at is an opportunity to address a need that exists in an underserved rural areas that we are confident will be able to be leveraged to not only provide a broader and more robust and fulfilling educational experience, but also, again, cascade into public safety, health care, and the other areas of again, just general community life that will be further leveraged for additional investment and be able to provide these communities with the same type of experience and opportunities that are experienced elsewhere.
Okay. We actually have a call in. I'm going to try to patch this one through and see what question one of our listeners has. Hold on a second. Hello, this is Gigabit Nation. Can I help you?
Yeah, I was listening to the conversation. I really wholly approve of this project, this wireless project, that is, of including the surrounding, and as I understand it, surrounding rural areas that don't have this infrastructure at this point. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I have a friend of mine whose mother stays in Mississippi, and she can see the interstate highway standing on her porch, but they don't have internet service provided there in her community.
Wow.
And that's in 2012. But my question is that why should not these HBCUs have the best and the latest in technology? I understand that I think it's a university in Nebraska maybe that's offering drone technology, drone pilotship to students. And when you look in these classrooms, we're not present. So why come our HBCUs don't get into the mode of providing this futuristic technology training for our children, and also become more business-oriented, whereas in these mega populations where, you know, African Americans are present, but when you look at the businesses and those infrastructure and firms that provide the consumables, you know, we're not doing that. What better way to put our folks to work?
Mm-hmm. Robert, you want to take that? Because actually, the particular technology that you mentioned, by the way, what's your name? First name?
My name is Pianchi, by the way.
Okay, hi, how are you? And again, thank you for calling in. But I haven't heard of that technology, and Robert, maybe you have and can definitely better answer it than I can.
Well, there are a couple of things. Again, HBCUs in general are, I wouldn't categorize as deficient in all regards of technology. This is opportunity. So if you were to follow through on the or follow the example respective of the community in Mississippi that doesn't perhaps have the connectivity that would be desired, and HBCU representing that community would be equally impacted. This is not something that is initiated out of the college or university itself. This is community infrastructure that the school would need to leverage. Technology is present there, but the types of investments that the University of perhaps of Nebraska and some other very large state institutions can apply to that type of opportunity is not necessarily present at the same level at an HBCU. But what we are trying to address with a part of the broadband initiative that we're discussing today is, in fact, ensuring that the infrastructure within the community is sufficient so that these schools and hospitals and perhaps other entities, but particularly the schools operating as hubs within the community, can, in fact, leverage connectivity to then, in fact, build upon it to enhance their campus environment so that you can have that type of opportunity within the classrooms and research centers and other areas. So it's not that HBCUs are necessarily deficient, but they are under-sourced, and most have tuition that is somewhat less than the other schools. So their availability to just invest equitably is not necessarily on par, but if we can, in fact, be successful in getting the infrastructure within the community itself enhanced, and this type of connectivity and this type of asset that we're talking about will go a long way to establishing a foundation by which we can build upon to ensure then that that type of expectation can be fulfilled in the next few years.
And if I'm understanding from everything that I've read and having had the Air.U folks on the show, in a situation such as Pianchi described with his mom, if there's a college in an area and the area isn't currently being served by internet access, that the partnership, the Air.U partnership, is trying to have the college working together with, say, local businesses, the local constituents, and maybe an outside provider, an outside funder, some sort of additional partner that would come in and with this group together create an infrastructure that's affordable, which is why wireless is being looked at, you know, as a, not opposed to, but probably in addition to fiber, say, you know, because fiber is more expensive, but creating wireless networks using the university as the hub but also as a partner. And it is the strength of the partnerships that each college develops will determine whether how much the people such as Tom would be able to take advantage of or get connected to the internet.
Right. No, absolutely. Again, the opportunity that we're promoting, respective of white space and these broadband channels, have an impact of 60 to 80 miles from the central source, if you will. And again, using the the HBCU as a hub, that opportunity will provide a degree of connectivity that will, we hope, be a lever, if you will, an enabler that will bring the community into more, if you will, into the information age, that will then spur additional investment, and that cascading effect will provide the community as a whole within 60, 80 miles initially, of having the type of opportunity and the type of exposure, the type of leverage, the type of impact, if you will. These are voters. These are voters within the state, and investment oftentimes breeds additional investment as the return on investment satisfies those that are putting up funds and other resources. So the opportunity is there, and there are many, many, many examples where there's a dividing line, if you will, oftentimes a highway, and one side of the highway is a community, a county, if you will, that has requisite infrastructure, and the other side perhaps represents a county that doesn't. HBCUs sometimes find themselves in the county that doesn't, but the ideas are there, the desire is there, the capability is there. What we need to provide is the foundation, again, that they can leverage as a community that will breed further investment, allowing them to provide the level of services that meet the expectations that were described Again, the capability is not there yet because the infrastructure doesn't always support it. But certainly the idea and the capacity to provide those services exist with the requisite infrastructure in place, which has to start at some point. We feel this is a good opportunity to begin the connectivity and the information access that would fuel further discussion, dialogue, and make the case passionately for further advocacy to provide the investments to build out to, in fact, then meet these expectations and be able to sustain as technology continues to evolve and be able to remain as competitive as one would hope and expect them to be.
And one thing too, I wanted to add to Pianki's comment about, you know, a lot of initiatives come through town and maybe there aren't enough African-American businesses or residents that benefit from them in an economic sense. One of the things I've put in a lot of my writings in the past is that once these networks go in, there has to be some sort of local coordinated effort by which you turn people at home, maybe they're unemployed, maybe they're underemployed, into entrepreneurs. So you use the technology to allow someone to start a one-person business, and maybe it's just selling knickknacks that they would sell at a church bazaar or something like that. But now that you bring the power of the internet in, you get those folks online, and then you provide additional support. You know, how not just how to use the technology and to use Word and so forth, but how to do basic accounting, how to do basic online marketing. There's a place in Vermont that they brought in some internet technology, but then they had a contest for local businesses to see who could come up with the best website or the best way to use the web to promote their products. But the bottom line is the community organizations, be it the church, be it the local government, support agencies, or what have you, created programs that foster people starting their own businesses, making themselves more proficient as professionals, and enticing new businesses to come to an area. So if this initiative with Air.U is going to be effective, there has to be local folks willing to take advantage of the connectivity to put folks online and through one way, form, or another, get them the economic acumen to be able to become then an economic force. And that's my perspective, you know, from what I've seen in a lot of other places, and you guys may have a different take on that or agree that maybe that is what needs to happen.
No, that is very consistent with the thought, and this is in fact a collaboration. Again, we're talking about specifically schools as hubs of the community, but this would clearly have the local legislation involved. We're looking at, as you point out, increasing the business and employment acronym. Folks can have potentially internet-related jobs. That's going to impact employment, impact your tax base, if you will, spawning further investment. There are teaching aids and other opportunities. You're looking at opportunities within the healthcare sector, public safety, being able to affect individuals with disabilities, senior citizens. Again, it's a cascading effect, and it's a collaboration that will have business models associated with it that go beyond just doing it perhaps because it's the right thing to do. This is an opportunity to provide resources for underserved communities and getting those communities to a place where they can begin to contribute and receive resources and provide contributions back accordingly, similar to any other community. So the opportunity for transportation to be impacted, insurance rates can be impacted. Employment rates can be impacted. Again, you can improve your tax base, which spawns other investment opportunities. Telemedicine, if you will, can impact insurance as folks become more cognizant and more aware of medical needs and opportunities and to be insured and to understand opportunities in that regard. So it's not a quick fix, but it is certainly one where it has a community feel and would take a community impact to be sustainable. And, again, that would involve the legislative community, which we are engaging with as well. So, yes, it involves a very robust, sustainable drive with associated advocacy that will show the benefits as they begin to reach fruition as, again, the access itself and the impact of the surrounding community starts to provide the benefits that we think it can.
So, Pion, can we answer your questions sufficiently there?
Well, yeah, somewhat. And this whole idea about hubs brings to mention that an organization I know in Kansas City, Missouri, has a facility called the W.E.D. Du Bois Learning Center. And there for at least maybe a decade and a half, they have had used that facility as a hub. They have a transmitter there where in the surrounding area, the city proper, they have satellites that have a computer, monitor, and keyboard where students can access the data center at the learning center, which contains the, you know, accounting programs, word programs, spreadsheets, history, and so on and so on. Students who don't have the opportunity to have computers at home. And, you know, that has been going on for quite some time. So this whole concept is a very viable one and very much needed. But, you know, it just has to be put in effect and it has to be broadened. As I said before, we need to produce more businesses in our community than what we have presently. It's very sad that we don't have that control over the things that we consume in these mega. I think someone mentioned Mississippi. I think in 18 counties in West Mississippi, I think the African American population is a majority. But when you look at the amount of produce and manufactured, the GDP of those counties are not controlled by the people that's doing most of the consumption. So I'm going to hang up and continue to listen on the chat room. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
You know, I want to say that community learning centers and computer learning centers are, as you pointed out, something that's been in play for quite a while. Here is an opportunity, again, to perhaps leverage an asset to further enhance their availability and capacity. They are centers not only for learning, but there's been quite an engagement with the senior citizen community, voter registration, again, telemedicine, as well as video conferencing and quite a number of other aspects of service that they can provide to a broader community. Hubs have been at HBCUs and for healthcare centers and clinics, but it's something, again, that is out there, and here's an opportunity to further leverage it. Again, yet still two communities that heretofore perhaps have not been able to take advantage of those.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask this question. You know, off and on you see stories or read about or hear anecdotally about tensions between small towns and colleges. You know, it doesn't even matter the type of college. I mean, just sort of an across the board. If you're in a small town, people say, well, we love the university, but they don't like the university for this reason and so on. Is number one, is that a real thing? Is that or is it just sort of more isolated than not? But then on the flip side, you know, of the colleges that are within your network, how do they foster better, closer, you know, productive relationships with the local community?
Well, I do think that there is some, there's some truth to that contention. Probably to the degree that's going to be more on an individualized basis, how the community accepts a school or university and how it fits in into the community. Again, with HBCUs, you need to go back to their founding, what they were chartered to achieve. The position that they have played within the community, very often aligned right with the Black Church in some of these rural communities, respective of the African American population. So they've oftentimes been the only school of opportunity, as well as perhaps a principal employer. Their scope has been pretty broad in the African American community, and it's been embedded over decades. So I wouldn't suspect that the type of tension that you've mentioned is as prevalent, respective of HBCUs, as you might find elsewhere. But very often you will find that the board of directors of these schools are pretty local as far as local businesses are concerned. The major donors are pretty much a local, and are often you're going to find alumni of the schools. So to the extent that they have been representative of the community and the community representative of the school, I think there is a closer alignment where, again, this type of opportunity will find a champion and a sponsor and perhaps less tension. The viability of the school is a byproduct of the viability of the community, and in some regard, vice versa. The two go hand in hand as far as the success of these types of programs are concerned. What the school can be taken advantage to do is clearly in this regard for the broader community. It's not to improve just the life on the campus, and it couldn't as an isolated entity. It's for the employment base of the surrounding community, the legislative base of the surrounding community as well. So I think that tension, while there and perhaps is natural for any principal employer and principal entity within a small community, and we are talking rural, small communities for the most part, I do think that there is a stronger alignment and bond because of the historical precedent that the schools and have served since their initial founding, and would be strong partners and advocates, if you will, to advocate for this going forward and be able to provide the results, if you will, from a community and school perspective, that would, again, establish the foundation for broader and sustainable investment to keep the momentum going and to build upon the successes.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen from any of your member colleges any particular uses of broadband technology that have stood out, you know, as being really, you know, super effective, super cool, you know, so outside the norm?
Well, I mean, there are examples. Some have been mentioned. Most are associated with looking at the K-12 population, introducing elementary, middle school kids to aspects of technology. helping senior citizens oftentimes with some health care needs and access in a public safety arena, aligning with the local hospital that may be in a broader or a larger urban setting, but establishing annexes, if you will, within the local community and using broadband as a part of connectivity to that. Voter registration has been a big part of providing access and information for oftentimes online voter registration. But by far, I think the greatest use to date has been in exposing the kids and the K to 12 population to technology, and giving them access and broadening their exposure on possibilities and what can be. There are quite a few efforts underway to expand the educational experience at the university level in distance and online, but that is still ongoing and, again, requires significant investment. But I think the greatest successes right now are in the elementary, middle school areas, providing, again, access, and also allowing these centers to often operate as computer labs where some of the equipment is not otherwise available within the home. So it's kind of the last mile of sorts within the greater community, but experienced at the university itself as, again, that hub.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing that set the Air.U announcement apart from the Gig.U announcement was Air.U, you know, coming right out saying, okay, we're advocates of wireless and particular use of unlicensed spectrum, TV white space, in large part because that technology represents the ability to make wireless more powerful, go further, reach further, be less expensive to build. So, you know, it had a lot to offer it. And I see wireless as, you know, you can use it with your smartphone, you can use it with your laptop or desktop. Now, I say all that to bring up, you know, one of the interesting demographics, which is African-Americans and Hispanics tend to be the populations using smartphones in larger numbers than anyone else. And I'm wondering, do you see the use of smartphones as sort of the primary computing tool, is that a good thing or a bad thing that we are buying more of these than anyone else?
Well, I think first we have to accept the reality that is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the question is, how do we leverage that? What do we learn from it? What can we distill from it that can further enhance that fact into something that is, you know, advantageous. Mobile technology, for any number of reasons, yes, has seemed to caught on, if you will, in the African-American Hispanic community. About 70% of the applications accessed are done from mobile devices. That's a reality. That's a population on the go. There are perhaps many reasons behind that, but I do think that the opportunity to leverage mobile technology anywhere, anytime access is something that can be advantageous if intentional in its leverage. It is there today. So how do we best communicate with this mobile population, if you will, and provide the ready access and the applications necessary? I think the major providers are working diligently to see how to expand capacity within not only the smartphone but the tablet markets as well. These are going to be single devices for the most part that will be anywhere, everywhere. So I don't see it as bad. There are some, you know, ongoing security concerns out there and capacity issues with regard to the robustness of these devices. But here you have a situation where market demand is dictating, you know, reaction to it. I don't know that was the intentional outcome. But certainly we find ourselves looking at this right now, and how do we better provide, again, the access with the requisite security, if you will, for a population that wants the technology with them on the move. It's a single connectivity. as opposed to perhaps going into the home where you would maybe expect a broader collaboration of the use of that technology. This is more one-on-one, single, private to some extent. Again, I'm sure reasons for that, but I do think there are opportunities that we should be looking at as to how best leverage this and ensure that the access, if you will, is there. And if you think about that, again, and you go back to the rural communities and the population that we're addressing, where that access is not readily available and as robust, at least from a student perspective, can impact whether or not they choose to attend these schools. And if you're looking at workers, can impact where workers might choose to relocate to support a local business. So, you know, given that, we have to learn from it and see how to best leverage that expectation from an investment standpoint to ensure that the lifestyle, if you will, is complementary to having that technology and the access for it traveling with the individual at all times.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you bridge I don't see smartphones as a bad thing in and of themselves, but I also look at the fact that smartphones, by default of their size and their capacity, allow you to get maybe 10-15% of the full application's value. In other words, the screens have had to be modified, the amount of data that can be brought on board is modified, your ability to manipulate it because you're working with a small keypad, you know, limits the amount of, you're not going to write your college dissertation on a smartphone. But how do you bridge from, you know, you've got a population that is adopting the smaller devices, but you have a sort of a business reality where you're going to need larger machines, I mean, like, you know, physically larger machines, and, you know, to the capacity as well, in order to do what we'll call, they're called serious computing. You see what I'm saying? So it's like a bridge here. I'm not sure we sort of see it. People see this as a bridge, or they see it as the end, you know, I've got my smartphone, now I'm set for life kind of thing.
Well, again, I don't think the capacity in and of itself of the delivery mechanism is a technology challenge or a technological challenge. Again, I think market demand will spur the requisite investment to make those as functional and to provide the features that the market requires. These delivery mechanisms, be it smartphone, tablets, they're going to be more robust, as you now know, within your automobile. You're going to have some projection capability so that you can, provide the requisite screens and even the virtual keyboards kind of anywhere. Technology has that capability today. This can be a receptacle, if you will, but it need not be the entire functional delivery mechanism in and of itself. So there are capabilities that would allow a more robust interaction. The question is, affordability of them. And, again, from a business model perspective, what is the return on that investment going to be? Is this for social use, or are we looking at more as business use and business applications? And if so, is that an expectation within a mobile environment? Is it business app or more personal and social media connected? But I do think that market demand will create, if you will, the opportunity for reduction in cost, as well as the robust offerings, some of which I mentioned. But there are capabilities now for projections from these small devices and virtual screens. You can draw down applications, cloud technology associated with these, more capability. in order to be more functional, but to what end is a question, and when might they be as affordable in mass as technology suggests the opportunities are. But I think market demand will dictate that, and those expectations will be met in short order.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the if you have 50 people in a room that are in the industry called broadband, you will often find that there will be, you know, group, and then there will be a wireline group, and everyone is sort of like, it can almost become like a holy war. You know, the wireless folks say they are the way, and you know, the way to better broadband, and everything else is going to fall short, particularly when you get to rural areas and small towns because of the cost of fiber. On the flip side, the fiber folks say, well, you know, ultimately, in the end, it's all going to be about fiber, you know, because we're going to need it. That's what's going to label because of the weaknesses of the wireless capacity. Do you see a clear path as you look at how things are unfolding, you know, with your initial talks with Air.U and your conversations with the colleges, your member colleges and so forth? Is there a sense of some sort of path from from wireless to wireline? Does, you know, do people see this as a stepping stone? Do they see wireless as the end point? Once we got that, then we're good to go.
Well, I don't know many that feel it's the end point. It is certainly a stepping stone, and it might be a very large stepping stone, but not envisioned as the end point. This is a very valuable asset, this space that we're talking about to acquire. But I don't think many feel that it's the end point. Technology will continue to evolve. Delivery mechanisms will continue to mature, and expectations will dictate how robust these are. The affordability question is being addressed as we speak. It's becoming more affordable. Rural communities in and of themselves are becoming more connected. You're getting returns on these investments. The stated broadband channels are becoming more broadband. There are more mechanisms vis-a-vis channels available to provide data content and other information streams. So I think it's a significant point in time. I would not consider it an end point. A significant point in time, but not an end point. This is a global market. And as we think about within the contents of the continental United States, there are certain limitations that we're speaking toward. But in a global environment, this will continue to evolve and mature to take advantage of the entire spectrum, if you will, available for access and information exchange.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any particular policies, either at the federal level or the state level, that are in place or should be in place that will facilitate this Air.U initiative?
Well, those that immediately come to play are incentives for the providers. Again, that's not often favored. Providing financial incentives, discounts, if you will, to perhaps some of the tax base and tax requirements, but we certainly want to incent these providers to continue to invest. I think the requisite equipment, if you will, that needs to be in play and in place in order to take advantage of some of what we've talked about perhaps needs to have subsidies applied to make it more immediately affordable. We talk and we are looking at access within the underserved, unserved, and rural communities. That in and of itself doesn't make it affordable. So I do think that there are opportunities to address federal policy respective of subsidies, tax credits, and certain tax breaks, if you will, for those that are impacted and choose to acquire some of these resources. And I think that's what I would concentrate on. There are many factors out there, but I do think that this is part a business community, a solution to be solved, and in order to incent business to be more involved and to continue their level of involvement, oftentimes you need to meet them where they live, and where they live is pocketbook, and until it gets to a point where they're getting a return on investment from the end user community as well as the respective other advertising or partners or what their supplemental funding base is, I do think that subsidies can play a more significant role in helping spur the investment to keep this moving along.
Mm-hmm. Now, we got about 3 minutes or so left. So in the end, a number of the colleges in your network are in states where there are anti-municipal network laws, meaning that if a community government wanted to own the network and the public utility wanted to start a network, they'd have trouble doing so. Do you expect to have any of those laws become a problem in any of the colleges that you're involved with?
These are challenges. These are challenges. And, one of the, efforts underway, of course, here is advocacy. And we spoke earlier about ensuring the legislative contingent, if you will, was involved in the discussion. At the end of the day, we are talking about citizens. We're talking about end users that are voters, if you will, and we're talking about communities within the country. And I think that we will need to advocate where appropriate to have modifications to some of these provisions that would make execution and implementation more challenging. I do think that as we embrace, if you will, and solicit support from the community itself, grassroots, if you will, as well as grass tops, that we have to be prepared for some of those fights, and to the extent that we can advocate successfully not only for the community's involvement, but also to perhaps ease the pain, if you will, on some of the providers that are supporting these bills, some of the utilities perhaps within the municipalities, we need to address it at a business model perspective, again, where they live. It will be challenging, but I do think that as you are looking at overall helping the community and the community itself being voters will, in fact, provide more resources out, if you will. I certainly think it's winnable. A lot of these situations, a lot of these ordinances, if you will, have not been challenged. There's not been a need to challenge. There's not been the opportunity there to challenge them on. So as this becomes more and more prevalent, I do think that we certainly can get beyond these hurdles, although they will be there. I do think the case has been made, the discussion is robust, and at the end of the day, this needs to be affordable and provided so that all residents of all communities can experience an equitable opportunity in an information age. I think that's a winnable argument. We will advocate strongly for it, and I think we'll prevail overall, and as successes become reality, I think those fights will become less and less challenging in other markets. Keep in mind that a lot of the providers that we're talking about are national, so we might be engaged with one or two or three providers in five or six or eight or ten states, but a success in one, we hope, will have a cascading impact in the others.
Great. Well, I'm going to have to close up here, though there's a lot more we could talk about, and I hope that we'll have an opportunity in the future, as the Air.U program unfolds, to come back and talk some more about how it's unfolding And so thank you again, Robert, for your time and your insights and observations about what's going on. Our audience definitely appreciates this kind of feedback.
My pleasure, and we appreciate the show bringing attention to it.
Excellent, excellent. And thank you to our audience for tuning in this week. Definitely check in on Thursday. We're going to be covering the Google announcement in Kansas City. So thank you, audience. Thank you, Hiawatha Broadband Communications, for being a sponsor of our show. And we'll talk to everybody next show.